One by one, the big department stores seem to be disappearing, not unlike the dinosaurs. We wonder if that's not an appropriate comparison. I'm Peter Jennings for the ABC Information Network. It is hard to pick up a newspaper these days without seeing another story about one of the big chains closing down some of its stores. Just this week, Macy's announced it is closing 8 stores around the country. Last week, the Alexander's chain, based in New York City, closed all 11 of its department stores. Many of the closings are in downtown areas. When Macy's closes its store on Main Street in Columbia, South Carolina, it will be the last of that city's big downtown stores to close its doors. Another Macy's, the one in downtown Newark, New Jersey, leaves shoppers in that city with few choices, besides a couple of large five and dimes. There are a lot of reasons why the stores are closing. Some of it has to do with the big chains taking too many financial gambles in the 1980s. The wave of mergers and acquisitions that ruined so many big companies didn't spare the department stores. Some of it is the continuing economic decay of what some people call the inner cities. Many of the latest closings were of stores that simply weren't profitable anymore. One New York Times reporter observed that at the Macy's in Newark this week, you could easily have rolled a bowling ball down almost any aisle without hitting a customer. It's the oldest cliche in the book, but it's fairly graphic. Some of it, though, has to do with the changing way that we do our shopping. Department stores achieved greatness in an era when their convenience was needed. They offered the ability to shop for many different kinds of quality goods under one roof. Well, now you can do that at almost any shopping mall, where hundreds of specialty stores compete with the big department stores for the same customers. If they are to avoid extinction, the big stores must adapt, and it's not going to be easy. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Peter Jennings.
From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Bob Hart, ABC News. Listen.
It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown.
An innocent man waiting to die in 2 days, that's very hard to come to terms with.
It was easy as pie to figure out where the bullet came in and where the bullet exited. It's not even a question.
You just said that your music reminds us of champagne music.
Good luck. Have a great retirement.
Hasta luego. Anything but a goodbye.
Thanks for all the years of entertainment.
We wish you a good retirement, yeah. Goodbye, Johnny.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
What are you doing this weekend that's so important you can't test your home for radon?
Hey, what are you up to, neighbor?
I'm carving a monkey out of a peach pit.
Oh, can I help?
Radon, a deadly naturally occurring radioactive gas that seeps into homes in this area, is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Many have tested their homes, but many still haven't. They're probably just too busy.
Doing, Dad?
I'm developing a compound that, when applied to the soles of shoes, keeps gum from sticking to them.
What a wonderful gift to mankind.
Testing for radon is quick, easy, and inexpensive, and the problem is fixable. So just about anyone can take time this weekend to test.
Hon, what are you going to do today?
I'm very busy. After I rake a perfect crosshatch pattern in the pea gravel in the driveway, I'm going to change the air in the spare tire of the station wagon.
I'd better make some sandwiches.
Call 1-800-SOS-RADON for more information or test your home today. A public service from the EPA and the Ad Council.
When the actress Candice Bergen got an honorary degree from the University of Pennsylvania last Monday, she said the day was doubly special in as much as that night the season finale of her TV show, Murphy Brown, would air.
You shouldn't miss the show. I think it's one of our best and maybe a television classic, we think. So it's certainly a big milestone for Murphy.
Bergen's words were prophetic, to say the least. The next day, in an effort to shore up the conservative vote for the June 2nd California primary, Vice President Dan Quayle was addressing a crowd in San Francisco, saying that the recent riots in Los Angeles were partly the result of a breakdown of the family structure. Then the vice president went on to say,
"It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice."
Reaction was quick and coming from all quarters. There was this from the head of the National Organization for Women, Patricia Ireland.
When Dan Quayle points to a fictionalized character and blames her and to fictionalized characters like her for the breakdown of family values, you have to wonder where his reality is.
Quayle's remark gave Democratic presidential candidate Bill Clinton the chance to weigh in.
Now, there's a lot of violence on television that may have a bigger impact on what happened in Los Angeles than the Murphy Brown sitcom. A lot of people shooting each other and cutting each other, denigrating the value of life. It's far more pervasive than examples of out-of-wedlock birth, which I don't approve of.
And from the almost candidate, Ross Perot.
I just thought it was goofy. When you think of the real problems that face this country, well, suddenly it's Murphy Brown, which is a fictional 30-minute show on television.
The California primary is likely to be Patrick Buchanan's last chance to score among the Republican Party's conservative wing, and he sided with the vice president.
Dan Quayle has struck a chord and a note with millions of Americans who really believe that Hollywood is undermining the moral fiber of the country.
In Washington, the vice president's staff was rubbing its hands with glee. As ABC's Ann Compton points out, it was a clear case of mission accomplished.
Around the vice president's office, the staff had been debating the Murphy Brown strategy for days. One top aide deleted the reference from his text. The vice president reportedly put it back himself using a home computer. The strategy was to hit the popular TV series Murphy Brown so hard, it would ignite a national debate on family values. It's a subject President Bush has been talking about, but getting little attention.
In fact, the voters have not been paying much attention to what any of the candidates has been saying during the primary campaign. The turnout at the polls bears that out. And as voters got ready for last Tuesday's primaries in Washington State and Oregon, many were expressing the views of this man.
I'm not interested in voting for Slick Willie, and I'm not interested in voting for Ayatollah Bush.
So as ABC pollster Gary Langer discovered, they wrote in Ross Perot's name.
Exit polls found surprising strength for Perot among primary voters who normally are viewed as party loyalists. Republicans rated Perot as favorably as they rated George Bush. Democrats liked Perot more than they liked Bill Clinton. And in a three-way matchup, Perot did about as well as his two rivals in their own party primaries.
Perot may be encouraged, but is he throwing his hat in the ring?
Not yet, thank you.
But he continues to campaign unofficially, bringing his message to whomever will listen.
We are spending our children's money now, $4 trillion down. You and I both know that's wrong. If you are happy living in a country that's $4 trillion in debt, then you and I don't relate to one another.
Congress would like to spend some money to help the riot area of Los Angeles and the flooded section of Chicago rebuild. ABC's Vic Ratner brings us up to date on the latest proposals.
Before heading out on a 10-day recess, the Senate approved a package of emergency loans and grants for riot victims in Los Angeles, but not before adding on almost a $1.5 billion package of summer jobs and school programs across the country. Maryland Democrat Barbara Mikulski called it a down payment on what needs to be done.
Mayors of big cities or small towns are holding it together on sheer grit and on absolutely no resources. America's coming apart.
The president has not said if he would sign the legislation into law the way it is. The House approved a much smaller emergency assistance measure.
That bill for $822 million is the one President Bush likes better. As the debate over how much to spend gears up, court action stemming from the Los Angeles riots continues. Bail was set for the four men accused in the assault of Reginald Denny, the truck driver pulled from his rig during the early hours of the riots. ABC's Jane Platt was in the courtroom.
Judge William Chidsey has set bail for the four defendants ranging between $50,000 and $195,000. The amount was determined by the nature of the charges and each defendant's prior criminal record. Lowest bail went to Gary Williams, who's accused of stealing Reginald Denny's wallet after he was beaten. Williams could face 7 years in prison. The other three defendants are charged with attempted murder, mayhem, and torture. If convicted, they could go to prison for life. All four have entered pleas of not guilty. They'll be back in court June 10th for a preliminary hearing.
The four are said to be gang members. Four of an estimated 150,000 gang members, the district attorney says, operate in Los Angeles and have made the violence there the worst in the country. The Crips and Bloods are the two largest gangs, and in the wake of the riots, they have signed a truce.
Our main priority was to stop the killing, because that was the most harmful thing
They came out of gangs.
The truce is good news for Ken Ball, who investigates gang violence.
As far as it working with gangs, this is the absolute biggest deal that I've ever come in contact with.
And for the people who live in the neighborhoods?
It's the safest I've felt on the streets in a long time, though.
It would mean a whole lot to us, because that means that we can still go back out on the streets and not be fear of the gangs, really.
But LAPD Sergeant J.J. May remains skeptical of a lasting truce.
I even see some of the rivalries starting up again. What else have they got to do out here?
Los Angeles police are investigating a possible guns for drugs deal involving street gangs. Two men were arrested for possessing a cache of military weapons, including gas grenades and a grenade launcher. Police quote one of the men as saying he was looking for someone who would negotiate a deal with gang members to sell the weapons for drugs. When the jury in Simi Valley acquitted the police in the Rodney King beating, it left one count against Officer Lawrence Powell undecided whether or not he had used excessive force as a police officer. A new trial on that lone count was ordered a week ago, and now the location has been set. Judge Stanley Weisberg says it will be Los Angeles.
The potential jurors in this case, no matter where they are selected, ultimately would have the same state of mind. Whether they're selected from Los Angeles County or another county, they would all have basically the same information.
While the judge rejected arguments that Powell cannot get a fair trial in Los Angeles, he did allow for a cooling off of sorts, setting the trial date for October 19th. Police brutality was at the heart of the Rodney King incident, and civil rights activists have frequently complained that the problem is more widespread than most of the public thinks. A federal study done after the King beating shows that the Los Angeles Police Department ranks 11th in the country in the number of police brutality complaints. New Orleans police are at the top of the list. The study has drawn criticism for a variety of reasons. For instance, Democratic Congressman John Conyers of Michigan says,
there's no analysis of basic questions. Are victims of police brutality predominantly racial minorities and poor? Now, that's the fundamental issue that should have commissioned the study. And there's no indication of race in this report.
And policemen criticize the report because they say it paints an incomplete picture in that it does not show how many complaints were justified. The case of a Virginia man and the timing of his appeal have rekindled the debate over whether or not innocent people are sentenced to death and executed. Lawyers for Roger Coleman were a day late in filing an appeal of his conviction for the 1981 rape and murder of his sister-in-law and sought to put off his execution with the introduction of what they claimed was new evidence. Coleman watched as appeal after appeal was denied.
I'm an innocent man waiting to die in 2 days. That's very hard to come to terms with.
Thomas Scott prosecuted Coleman.
While he's certainly not a genius, he's well above the average intelligence level. He is articulate, I grant him that. And what we have here is a shrewd, convicted murderer who is trying to snooker the public.
ABC's Walter Rogers was at the prison in Jarrett, Virginia, when Coleman's last appeal was turned down.
Coleman spent his final hours hoping the U.S. Supreme Court would be sympathetic to his appeal. He claimed that evidence crucial to his defense had been excluded from his trial. But the high court rejected Coleman's plea and accepted a lower court verdict that he had raped and murdered Wanda McCoy 11 years ago. Coleman died without complications in the electric chair after a 90-second jolt of electricity destroyed his nervous system. Outside, a candlelight vigil was maintained, opponents of the death penalty faithful to the end.
The state of Texas executed two prison inmates during the week, a man convicted of raping and murdering a 15-year-old girl, and a Vietnam veteran convicted of hiring a hitman to kill his wife. The controversy over the assassination of John F. Kennedy has been refueled by the movie JFK, and now the prestigious Journal of the American Medical Association has gotten into the act. Publications editor, Dr. George Lundberg.
It was easy as pie to figure out where the bullet came in and where the bullet exited. It's not even a question.
Lundberg's assertion is based on statements of a pair of Navy doctors. More on that from ABC's Richard Davies.
The two former U.S. Navy pathologists who conducted the autopsy on the body of President Kennedy broke their silence for the first time in 29 years, telling the Journal of the American Medical Association their examination was done scientifically and without interference. The journal's editor, Dr. George Lundberg, says he accepts the pathologist's findings.
I can state without concern or question my agreement with Drs. Humes and Boswell that President Kennedy was struck and killed by two and only two bullets fired from one high-velocity rifle.
The finding supports the conclusion of the Warren Commission that President Kennedy was killed by a lone assassin.
Robert Johnson is not satisfied by the explanation. He's director of archives at the JFK Center in Dallas, an organization which supports the theory that the late president was the victim of a conspiracy.
It's their opinion, of course, and they have a right to that. But all the serious researchers and everybody that I know of consider the medical evidence hard, and most of them believe that the shot came from the right front as far as the head wound is concerned.
So while the statement by the two pathologists enforces one school of thought, it has hardly laid the subject to rest. As bookstore manager David Wetter says,
people are still reading books on the Lincoln assassination conspiracies, which occurred over 100 years ago. This is not going to die. I don't know if it ever will die.
Currently, efforts are underway to convince the Bush administration to open all government files on the assassination to clear up the debate. The Bush administration has relaxed its position on setting up storage banks for fetal tissue research. Even so, the president says tissue from induced abortions will be excluded. Critics such as Richard Fuller of the American Federation for Clinical Research say the president's decision is based more on political than medical grounds.
Pro-life, pro-choice individuals, Republicans and Democrats all joined together because they understood what this was, that it was a question of science, a question of healing, and not a question of abortion. Unfortunately, the president and his advisors still seem to put it in that particular category.
Transplants of fetal tissue show promise in treating a variety of diseases, and Christopher Curry, who's a diabetic, is encouraged by the president's action.
Thanks to this, I won't have to confront the prospect of extending my life through the demise of another's life. The president's executive order positively separates the controversial abortion issue from fetal tissue research.
The administration's ban on the research was started in 1988 out of concern that the use of such tissue would encourage abortions. There is much concern over the side effects the sleeping pill Halcyon can cause.
In the interests of patients, I submit the message for patients must be, do not take Halcyon. Halcyon causes psychiatric disorder.
Dr. Ian Oswald bases his opinion in part on clinical studies which found that patients who took Halcyon suffered personality changes. While some do, Halcyon helps others, such as Kathleen Schweitzer, who's the head of the Manic Depressive Association of St. Louis.
With the help of Halcyon, my husband has a wife, my children have a mother, and my teams have a coach. And I know I speak for thousands of people when I say the patient's access to this medication should not be denied.
After hearing from both sides, an FDA advisory committee ruled that Halcyon is safe enough to remain on the market, but the panel also asked that the drug's warning label be strengthened. Halcyon's been available to the public for the past 10 years. Last October, concern about it resulted in Britain's banning the drug. Health concerns have contributed to a major decline in cigarette smoking in the U.S.
49% of all the people who've ever smoked have now quit. So there are over 44 million former smokers in the United States.
Dr. Gary Giovino of the Centers for Disease Control, who says there are fewer smokers now than at any time in the past 37 years. Meanwhile, a study published in the British medical journal, The Lancet, claims that cigarettes will kill one out of every five people in industrial countries. The study shows that more women will be the victims, and for that reason, Scott Ballen of the Coalition on Smoking and Health says they have to be better educated about the hazards.
We are not and have not done a good enough job in focusing on women and minorities, for that matter, with respect to the issues related to tobacco.
Public health officials face an uphill fight while they spend $100 million a year worldwide telling about the bad effects of smoking. The tobacco industry spends 30 times more in advertising. More than a year of political friction, constitutional debate, and military maneuvering has exploded on the streets of Thailand's capital. The demonstrations in Bangkok pitted unarmed civilians against a well-equipped army. ABC's Jackie Northam was in the middle of it.
The crowd is completely undaunted. They're hyped up for this. As you can hear in the background, they're chanting, they're yelling. They want to win this. But unfortunately, they're going against live bullets, and the most they have is clubs.
ABC's Bill Redeker says dozens of people were either killed or wounded before Thailand's prime minister and the leader of those opposed to him agreed to meet to stop the fighting.
The deal, brokered by the revered king of Thailand, is that all 3,000 protesters who had been jailed receive amnesty. The prime minister also agreed to see constitutional reforms that would require the prime minister to be elected official. Prime Minister Suchinda is not, which is, of course, what touched off the riots in the first place.
As the weekend arrived, there were reports that Thailand's prime minister might eventually go into exile. For 30 years, a devoted audience flipped on its TVs each week to hear this. The mainstay of the Lawrence Welk Show was its so-called champagne music.
That came from me, I believe, but partially not from me, from the mail. And so much of the mail said the same thing. They said that your music reminds us of champagne music.
And with his a one and a two, Lawrence Welk, his accordion, and his musical entourage serenaded and delighted his mostly older audience for 16 years on network TV and then in syndication. Lawrence Welk died of pneumonia in Santa Monica, California. He was 89. A guardian angel must have been looking over the Los Angeles Angels early Thursday morning as the team bussed its way down the New Jersey Turnpike. One of two buses ran off the highway and crashed. No one was killed, but several Angels were injured. The most seriously hurt, manager Buck Rogers.
He has three, the fractured seventh right rib, fractured right elbow, and a fractured left knee, and the others are of a less serious variety compared to those injuries.
Rod Carew, the Hall of Famer, who's the Angels' hitting coach, was shaken up.
For 19 years, I've been afraid to fly in airplanes, and now I'm on the ground, and I'm in a bus, and there's an accident, so now I don't know which way to go. Maybe I should ride a bicycle.
The team continued on to Baltimore. Manager Rogers was flown back to California for treatment. A few weeks ago, there was a story from Michigan about the discovery of the world's largest living organism, an underground fungus. Now there's an even larger fungus among us, and we hear about it from Cynthia Land of affiliate KOMO in Seattle.
A humongous fungus has been discovered by Washington forest rangers. The giant growth was discovered under the forested slopes of Mount Adams. The fungus came to rangers' attention because it was killing trees by eating their roots. Now, by comparison, Michigan claims their fungus stretches an amazing 38 acres. But that pales in comparison to the Washington fungus, which Ken Russell, the Washington Department of Natural Resources, says covers about 1,500 acres. Its tentacles are said to reach into three southwest Washington counties. Cynthia Land for ABC News, Seattle.
The National Geography Bee was held in Washington, D.C. last Thursday, and the winner's fate depended on what the letters EEZ stood for. Quizmaster Alex Trebek put the question to the finalists, Lawson Fite and Jeffrey Hatchard.
Jeffrey, we'll go to you first this time. What did you write down?
Environmental Exploration Zone.
Lawson, what did you put down?
Exclusive Economic Zone.
The correct response is Exclusive Economic Zone. Lawson Fite, congratulations. You are the 1992 National Geography Bee champion.
Lawson Fite is a 13-year-old eighth grader at Shumway Middle School in Vancouver, Washington. He won a $25,000 college scholarship. Farewell to a king when World News This Week continues in a moment.
This is a story about American heroes. They changed quite a few lives last year. Jorge Vasquez put out fires, but no, he's not a firefighter. Philip Dale discovered several new stars. Oh, he's not an astronomer. And Elaine Capobianco, she saved a child from drowning, but she's not a lifeguard. They're teachers, but to the kids they've reached, they're heroes.
I'm a teacher. The children are the heroes.
We're not just teaching subject matter, we're teaching human beings.
I am tough as nails, but they know that I love them.
I mean, we've got a legacy that follows behind us forever.
Teachers have the power to make an impact on our future. Reach for that power. Teach. Find out how by calling 1-800-45-TEACH. Be a teacher. Be a hero. 1-800-45-TEACH.
A public service message brought to you by Recruiting New Teachers, the Ad Council, and this station.
Once again, for old time's sake.
And now, here's Johnny!
John F. Kennedy was president when Johnny Carson took over The Tonight Show. He and the ensuing six occupants of the White House provided Carson with a wealth of one-liners, as did other prominent figures and items of the day. Carson was king of late night, and one of his former writers, Dick Cavett, is hard-pressed to cite any single reason for his longevity.
I don't know that we'll ever know the ultimate mystery of why he's lasted for 30 years, except to me, his qualities
add up to more than enough.
Carson may have expressed it best himself.
I think one of the dangers, if you are a comedian, which basically I am, if you start to take yourself too seriously and start to comment on social issues, your sense of humor suffers somewhere. You can't really split it. If you want to be serious, then go out and be serious and write a book.
Last Friday night was Johnny's last. It's estimated that 62% of the viewing audience tuned in to see the king of late night abdicate with class.
But it has been an honor and a privilege to come into your homes all these years and entertain you. And I hope when I find something that I want to do and I think you will like and come back, that you'll be as gracious inviting me into your home as you have been. I bid you a very heartfelt good night.
And from his fans, heartfelt wishes of their own.
Johnny, it's been great. I remember you as a child.
Good luck. Have a great retirement.
Hasta luego. Anything but a goodbye.
Thanks for all the years of entertainment.
We wish you a good retirement, yeah. Goodbye, Johnny.
And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longen, engineering by Tien Trong and Gary Jeffries. I'm Bob Hart, ABC News, New York.